Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Good morning and welcome back to Just the Facts with me, Jill Wine Banks, and a very special guest today. I'm very excited to be joined by Dr. Camilla Paca, who is an expert in trauma. And we're going to look at a very unique view of why the survivors of Epstein and other abusers are going forward and insisting on accountability. It's going to be very interesting. Should I call you Camilla or Doctor? What's your preference?
You can call me Camilla. It's fine.
Okay. Thank you. But I want everyone to know that you are an expert in the field of trauma and that you've done some really interesting work and have studied in very special places to find out about why what is going on is not just about accountability for the guilty, but it is about empowering the survivors, to helping them to move beyond the trauma and to move from surviving to thriving. And you've been working now with one of my dearest friends, Sivia Tamarkin, who is president of the National Council of Jewish Women in Arizona, and really the power and brains behind, along with NCJW, Ruth's Place, a very unique thing in Scottsdale, Arizona, but which I understand, and we'll get to this a little later, serves groups that are in need of trauma support beyond Arizona. So we'll get to that. But first, I would really like you to describe to me, if you can, what Ruth's Place is and what the strategies are. What is your methodology for helping survivors of sexual assault move on?
Yeah, so Ruth Place is a really unique program. When we were looking to design a trauma healing program that was specifically for the survivors of sexual trauma, we were like, okay, let's look at what's working and what is also kind of the ideal. And what we decided is that a lot of people go and spend years in personal therapy, they do their own personal thing, but coming back into relationship and being able to trust and feel safe in relationship was a major component of that. Also, that a lot of people carry a huge amount of shame. So they feel like people don't understand their experience, especially with sexual trauma. So any type of trauma carries shame, but sexual trauma in particular carries a different level of shame. So we were like, how do we create community? And what we found is that all the research tells us that in trauma healing, we heal in relationship. So we were like, how do we create small community to be able to help survivors heal? And so our program is a small group program. It is beautiful because at the end, people actually become friends. And I feel like that is kind of one of the most amazing things that's part of this. But people can come into the groups and they know that somebody else has had a similar experience, but they don't have to know the details. They just know that I see you, I hear you, I feel you. And I think that that's a beautiful thing. Mm. And our program is a three-phase program. So when we looked at kind of the research of empowerment and salutogenic, which is health-based healing. We found
Wait,
that there
stop
was
stop there because I've heard the word before. Salutogenics is a methodology, and it's what you're using very successfully. And you also mentioned that you are a unique program, and I think that's important to know. How you are also helping to carry this beyond the small groups that are meeting in the physical setting of Ruth's Place in Scottsdale to I believe you're in Ohio, and where else are you helping groups form?
Yes, we have a wonderful collaboration right now with North Star, which is out of Pennsylvania, and they are actually helping survivors of trafficking. So they are a treatment program, which is almost a year long, I think, their full program, which is a full restorative program. So we actually do a Zoom group for them to help their survivors as they move through their healing process as well. And we have participants in California, we have participants in Texas, we have participants in all kinds of different places. But our collaboration with North Star has been really unique. And we piloted that about a year ago. And now we're on, our, I think, our third group of survivors in their program, which is really amazing. So what's nice about our program is it translates well in person, but it also works virtually. And I think sometimes, a lot of times, I've had participants say to me, hey, the online groups are just as good as the in-person. So I'm like, that's
really
a success. Because a lot
that's
of times
a
people
surprise.
Are worried. Yeah. Yeah. They're like, they want to be able to get the quality of the programming, but they're worried about accessing it in an online platform. So I think that that's a good thing. And that's one of the things when we were designing the program, it's like, how can people, we want to, the most amount of people possible to access it. And accessibility is a huge issue too. So when we think about how can somebody in a rural community or how can somebody that's a working mother or a single parent access this, we are really aware of creating flexibility for people in terms of like, okay, how do we come to you in your home and wherever you can be able to kind of access services. So I think that's really important too.
I'm sort of surprised to hear that because my understanding is that part of the benefit of the program is the relationships that are formed. And of course, we're hearing all this about how our younger generations are suffering because they have lived so much online through Zoom and other means that they aren't forming real human relationships. But you're able to do that through these groups?
Yeah, I believe so. I think because our groups are about voice and choice. So a lot of what we do is not just listening, but it's actually actively engaging and, you know, being able to support each other. So we might do an exercise or we might be working because we have three phases in our program. It starts with brain body education, which is understanding how the trauma impacts your brain, your body, understanding that the symptoms are normal and that it's not anything wrong with you. It's what happened to you. But that there's normal physiological responses and nervous system responses that throw us off, that that stop us from living our best possible life as a result of the trauma. So we really do a lot of normalizing and understanding the why is our system doing this? You're not crazy, you're not broken, but your system is responding the way it should do, considering the abnormal events that you went through. The second
part is... And I understand that one of your, as part of that mind-body, is to learn to deal with the triggers that remind you of the assault or the trauma that you suffered, and to say... This is not a pathology. You're not sick. You don't need medicine. This is not a psychological illness. This is something that happened to you that caused a normal response. It's sort of, is it like the, when your adrenaline starts going, you know, the fight or flight response, which is a normal thing that anyone would suffer.
Yeah, and we're physiologically programmed to do these things. And the way that we do them is based on what's been modeled for us. So if I've grown up in a house where people, when they get angry, kick a wall, I'm more likely to kick a wall. If I grow up in a house where everybody goes quiet and hides when somebody's angry, then I'm more likely to hide. So, you know, these responses are just amplified when we've experienced trauma. So we have normal responses to stressors that we have every day, but then we have trauma responses, which are kind of like a normal response amplified.
And so that's the first part of your program. And I think you spend about 8 weeks working on that. And then you move to phase two. And what is phase two?
So phase two is all self-regulation. So in the first phase, we identify the pattern. So we think about, okay, how do you react? What are your activators? And I call them activators because they can be small and they can also be big. So when I think about a trigger, I think like that's kind of big. But there's activators that happen every day. It can be a sound. It can be a smell. It can be something that you see. So there's all these sensory activators that people may or may not be aware of, but they're aware that they're having a big response all of a sudden. And often it's because it's a buildup. So we identify the way that their individual nervous system responds. And then the second part, when we're doing all the self-regulation, is about building what I call like a toolkit or a menu that's specific to their nervous system. So a lot of what we see on the socials and stuff like that is all about calming. But there's people that go low and disassociate. And if you go low, you don't need calming. You need to come up. So we teach people individual strategies, tools. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these are kind of things that you are using from a somatic perspective. So they're body-based ones. They're things that are quick, things that are easy, because not everybody has time to go and do like a 20-minute meditation or to go and do like a full thing that they need to, like in the moment. They need something quick that can get their nervous system back online. So
like
this is really practicing. So a lot of times people, when they disassociate, they need to get back in their body. So we're inviting them to do something like rubbing their hands together really quickly, starting to brush their body, getting contact with their body. So what we're showing them is very simple exercises to get your nervous system back online. And some people have been so checked out for so long because sexual trauma really impacts your ability to feel your body safely, that we're also just teaching how to be able to get back in touch with what you feel, where you feel it, how it feels, and being able to kind of be aware of that. That's called interoception. So that's like the first step in that process. But what a lot of people tell somebody is, hey, go do a relaxation, go do some deep breathing. Breathing can be activating for certain people if that's something that's been involved in their trauma. So we want to expose them during that 8 weeks to as many different strategies as possible so that they can pay attention to, hey, what works for me? What do I like? Opposed to this is what you should be doing. It's about what do you need and what do you like and what's going to work for you. So that's very much that kind of building, skill building and practicing. So I always say it's an experiment. See if your body likes it. If it doesn't work for you, I'll get you something different. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, having done this for about 20 years now, I'm like, there's people where we've gone through quite a few before we found the one, but we've always found something for people. Yeah. So I think that that's kind of like the strategy behind that.
SpinQuest Social Casino. The presents are open and you're over the in-laws. It's a perfect time to grab your phone and play SpinQuest.com with live dealer blackjack, craps, and a ton of slots. And here's a great deal for the holiday, a $30 coin pack for $10. And if you're hearing this ad, you can play right now on SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I love the individualization of that. And what happens after the self-regulation and learning what works for you, which is a strategy that works not just for surviving sexual assault, but sexism. But that's a different topic. We won't talk about that now. But I have found that you need different tools. You can't respond the same way to everything. But so what's the next phase?
So the last phase in the program, and this is like the formal program because we invite people to stay part of our community even after they've graduated, is called post-traumatic growth. So this is really about like regaining identity, who is the me that I want to be, being able to think about self-confidence, stepping into your passion and your purpose. We know now that the biggest thing that keeps people going through their trauma healing process is hope, passion, and purpose. So when we think about those things and we think about people that survive like really terrible situations, it's that hope, passion, and purpose that helps people continue on, especially through times that are hard. And then we also think about healthy relationships, like what are red flags? What are green flags? Like what are things that we want in relationship? And this is where we see a huge amount of growth in people kind of redefining who they are and coming into who they were always meant to be, but got smothered by the trauma or what was going on in their early life experiences. So this is a really exciting period to watch people grow. We also bring back play and fun and things that are kind of like pushed to the side, because when you're in survival, you can't do those things. They're contrary. Right. But when you start to heal and you start to come back into yourself and you start to have voice and choice again, you can have fun again and bring back in joy. And so a lot of that time is really spent like building the new life. And I call it the new life because the beauty of what's inside people is always there. Their light has always been there, but it's been, you know, dimmed, right, or there's been something put on top of it. So we're rediscovering the light and really helping people kind of relaunch is what I kind of call it.
It sounds amazing. And my understanding is that salutogenics, which is the basics of this methodology, was developed to help Holocaust survivors. So it goes back to the 40s and was successful there as well. Is my understanding correct as to the founding? I can't remember the founder's name, but...
Yeah, it was Anton Antonovsky. Yeah. And it was developed out of that time period. And what they found is when they looked at the people that had, you know, successfully moved through, you know, the horrific traumas that were existed during that time, the people that had been able to move through and be able to kind of, again, relaunch, go into their own post-traumatic growth, had held this mindset of health, this mindset of passion and purpose. And I think that, you know, when we look at the work of several people that, you know, were, had been in concentration camps and situations like that, and that were able to kind of continue on, right, after and continue in their fields, that was kind of the common thread, was that they had held this idea of health and hope and being able to have passion and purpose, even within the camps, even within the atrocities and the horrific things that were going on. They found passion and purpose within those places.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we think about that, it's when we think about why does somebody get PTSD and somebody else not get PTSD, it often has to do with the accessibility to groups, so the accessibility to relationships. And it's actually called the kind of golden time after an event. So after 9/11, they also did some research and they said, well, why did certain people, and they did it with children, why did certain children develop PTSD after 9/11, right, that were in the buildings and others not? And what they found is that the children that didn't develop PTSD had gone to a small community art group. So it wasn't even a therapy group. It was actually run by volunteers. And they had gone and they had drawn. So they had drawn pictures of what they had seen. There wasn't like a heavy intensive therapy component, but they had gone in community, had snacks, and drawn pictures. And all of those kids that had done that and had accessed that program, you know, had bounced back and were resilient. So like, you know, we have a drive towards resiliency anyway, and children are more resilient. I call them bouncy because their brains are more bouncy. They rewire quicker. But when I think about that, we all have that ability. If we get support, if we get resources quicker after we've experienced something, we are less likely to go on to develop PTSD. So it's really important in these situations to get that access to resources and community-based resources as soon as possible.
Well, when you mention as soon as possible, I understand that this actually can work for an adult who suffered trauma as a child. I mean,
absolutely.
I understand you've had patients, or what do you call the people? You've had participants?
Yeah, participants.
Participants in your program who suffered a trauma as a child, but who are now, you know, 50 years on from that trauma, and that this works for them too. Is that correct? So that you don't have to give up just because you didn't get immediate help.
Yeah. So we've had, I think I don't want to say oldest, that's such like a bad word. Our most seasoned graduate was 74 and was able to rebuild her whole life. And it was amazing to watch us. And I think there was I remember when I was training, you know, 20 something years ago, they said, oh, you know, you can't learn past a certain age, or you can't rewire stuff past a certain age. That's not true. And we know that that's like absolutely not true now, because we have the technology to prove it, but you can rewire at any age.
Right.
So, you know, there's some people that believe that you grow a new brain every 90 days. So like when we think about cell turnover and the ability to rewire, it may take longer. It may be a little bit harder, but it's 100% possible. So we have a lot of people, especially I think for me, post-COVID, that were activated or had things that happened during that time of isolation that brought back a lot of memories of early childhood trauma and sexual trauma, and came back to, you know, to do this work 50s, 60s, even 70s, and have been really successful in the programming because it's ready to leave them. It's ready to go. I always say that there's a point when trauma is like, you know, it's held on for so long, and then eventually it's ready to release. And when you feel safe and when you feel supported And when you feel that people understand you, you have a greater capacity to release safely.
So I'm assuming that you have to be ready to release to benefit from this, because if you're not, and the other thing is, what are the dynamics of the group? How do you put together a group? Has there ever been a disruptor in the group or someone who just isn't benefiting or is hurting the rest of the group?
Well, I think it's interesting because we didn't use a therapy model. There's not the excessive sharing, or, and I hate to use this word, but sometimes dumping of stuff. Like there's not the opportunity to do that. Our groups are kind of structured in a really nice way that we start off with a check-in. We kind of regulate, we come in, we start feeling safe, we start with a check-in, but then we move into an activity. So we move into an opportunity to explore whether, depending on what phase it's in, a particular concept or a little bit of learning, and then an application. So the applications themselves can be that we're actually doing an exercise. It could be that we're writing. It could be that we're drawing. It could be that we're doing any of the things. But in during that time, people have the ability to kind of go inward to be able to work on whatever's going on for them. But they also have the voice and choice to share or not to share. So I think it's been really interesting because I think it removes the dynamic that you get in other support groups where it's just people talking the whole time, a little bit of information, but a lot of other people that maybe are empaths and sensitive people picking up other people's stuff. And so we really work hard to create an environment that doesn't feel like that, that you feel supported, and that's an empowerment type model, but you don't feel dismissed, but you're also not walking out the door with everybody else's stuff.
So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was I didn't for a long time understand how much worse sexual assault was than a physical assault, obviously that's physical, a being beaten up or being robbed, which are a different kind of assault. Until I read a book called I Will Find You by Joanne Connor, who was a journalist who was raped while she was on assignment and had all the resources that one would hope you could possibly have. And the book really describes how disrupted her life was by this event. And it really made me see this in a different light. And I want our audience to also understand how, and let's focus on the Epstein survivors, how traumatic this event was and why it's so important for them, not just to get accountability for the guilty, but because this will help them move on. And if you could explain that, I think it would be beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think that with sexual trauma, there is a strong relationship component. Most trauma happens not in a kind of one-off situation, but a lot of times, especially like what we're seeing in the Epstein cases, there's grooming. And so that grooming is a development of some type of relationship. It's the development of some type of trust. And so what happens is that when, you know, the event happens or the abuse happens, there's already been the development of some type of trust in relationship. So a lot of what happens for us or for any survivor relationally is that they start to question themselves. They question their judgment. They question their ability to be safe. They question their ability to be choose. They actually can sometimes feel like there's something wrong with them. They're dumb. Why didn't they know? Why didn't they know that this person was doing this? But groomers and people that do this are extremely skilled. And so what a lot of what we talk about, even in the groups, is that these people are skilled, like they're almost professionals. And so they pick people and they scout people that are vulnerable in some way. So it could be that, you know, you're vulnerable because your parents aren't looking after you, or that you have some level of neglect, you're vulnerable financially, you're vulnerable because you just come out of a relationship or a marriage or something like that. They're very, very selective in terms of who they choose. So, you know, you're a person that may already be a little bit emotionally vulnerable, and these are professionals that are in this to be able to get what they want. And so there's a different dynamic, but the trusting of self is diminished, as well as the shame component. So the shame component of what we have to do in those situations is something that haunts people. And a lot of people don't understand that shame is the most powerful human emotion. So shame is the same thing as a panic attack. You can get a shame attack. So the reality is that a lot of people are sitting so deep in questioning themselves and shame. And then on top of that, we have the body component. So the body component is that the body remembers. So the body remembers these things and you will have more symptomology. So we, especially for women, you know, that's all of our reproductive system. So that's all of our lower half. And, you know, I've met women that have been completely shut down from the waist down. Like they cannot feel anything in that area anymore because they've had to do that to survive the trauma that they've experienced. So what we're seeing here is people that are traumatized not only in the upper area where they might feel anxiety or fear or anger, but they are also traumatized in that they can get frozen really easily and they can disassociate and they can shut down and they can numb out. So the strategies that our body has to use to survive sexual trauma is complex. And that's why a lot of people with, you know, that have had sexual trauma have complex trauma, which has that relational component. And it also has that disassociative component. So that kind of numbing out from the world or trying to shut down the body responses.
Are the survivors who have now come forward very publicly benefiting from being able to discuss what happened to them publicly? Is that part of the healing process for the Epstein survivors?
SpinQuest Social Casino. The presents are open and you're over the in-laws. It's a perfect time to grab your phone and play SpinQuest.com with live dealer blackjack, craps, and a ton of slots. And here's a great deal for the holiday, a $30 coin pack for $10. And if you're hearing this ad, you can play right now on SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I believe it is. I think what a lot of people, especially with sexual trauma because of the shame, it's a secret. So I think that, you know, when we hold a secret in our bodies and our brains and our soul, it loops and we're continually thinking about these things when we see something, when we experience something, and it can be as simple as a smell. It can be as simple as, you know, seeing something outside. It's looping in our own brain and body. So by releasing it verbally and making sure that obviously we're supported, but releasing it verbally and being seen in our story, being heard, is really, really important. And I think that all survivors at some point need an opportunity to have their story heard in a safe, contained environment. And sometimes it's public. So sometimes it's like, I want everybody to know that this is what went on. And that's a personal choice. So I have lots of survivors that that will pursue the person that, you know, that committed the crime against them legally. I have some people that don't want to do it legally, but that do want people to know in a different forum. So they might write about it. They might post, you know, write an article about it, write a book about it, do some type of public appearance to speak about it. But I think everybody has a choice in, you know, how they want their voice to be heard. And I think that for these particular survivors, it's very empowering because of the power dynamic that a lot of these people held to be heard publicly and in that forum.
And so, of course, that makes me think of Virginia Giuffre, who was absolutely believed and who cooperated in writing a book that is very powerful, but who ended up committing suicide. She seemingly had moved on from her trauma, but apparently did not move on from her trauma. Is that common or was that a unique situation?
I think it's interesting because trauma hits in waves. So what happens is that we have kind of the initial wave where we might release something and we might be able to, you know, write the book or make the public appearance or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that it's necessarily gone through our body. So a lot of times people have to go and do additional work. And the reason why we call our last phase post-traumatic growth is because you have to continue to grow. And, you know, I'm a domestic violence survivor and I'm still doing post-traumatic growth. And that's not to say that I haven't done my work or I haven't healed myself, but sometimes there's just things in life that come. Like you may see a case like this and feel like you've done a lot of really good work, right, personal work, and then be activated by it. We don't know what the unconscious holds and we don't know what the body holds necessarily until it comes. So sometimes I think that people will kind of feel like they did their piece and then be done with it and then not know what to do if they get kind of what we call a resurgence or another wave of response. And that's often when people feel overwhelmed. And so then in that overwhelmed place, it's like, that's why we continue to have our community open, is even if people graduate, they can always come back into our groups and our services, because we want people to know that if you have a bad month or a bad week, and it doesn't matter if it's a year or 2 years on from graduation, that you can always come back. And I think that that's an important thing, is that in our own minds, we think, oh, I did all the work. I did all the therapy. I did the book. I did all the things. I should be fixed. There's something wrong with me. No, what it is it's a normal activation of something that's happening that's still stored, usually in the body.
And do you think that when the Epstein files are released, and I'm saying when, and if they are not redacted to the point of being totally meaningless, that will help the survivors move beyond their trauma? Will it help the public understand the depth of depravity and the seriousness of the trauma? What do you see as the benefits of the release of the information?
I think particularly people don't realize that there is still sexual slavery. So I think that, you know, there is a lack of awareness because we don't see it. It's an unseen and it's often an unspoken. And a lot of our judicial systems shut down these cases really quickly. So it's important for these bigger cases to be public, for other people to feel empowered to go reopen their own cases or to put their own cases forward. A lot of people don't report and don't move forward with their own cases because they don't feel empowered to do so. So by showing this, you know, this large scale with powerful people, it shows that one, you can go and you can open your case at any time. You do not have to sit in silence. Two, that other women are empowering other people to be able to say, hey, this is not okay. And for people to be aware that this is happening in all different communities. Sometimes people think, oh, it's just, you know, impoverished communities, or it's just migrant communities, or it's just immigrant communities. This is happening everywhere. And, you know, having worked with survivors, I have survivors that are from all different economic groups, all different socioeconomic situations, professionals, all different types of situations. And I'm like, this is real. The sale of people is still happening in the United States. And it's not gone, and it needs to be addressed.
Thank you for saying that. And I actually feel derelict because I haven't given the website information for Ruth's Place, which I think everyone listening should know. It is Ruth's, R-U-T-H-S, Place, A-Z, ruthsplacearizona.org. And so anyone who's looking for information about participating in a Ruth's Place program, wherever they are, you don't have to be in Arizona, please go to the website to get the information you need, because it is a unique program in America. It's become a model that other states are starting to look at, which is wonderful, to deal with trauma and to empower the survivors to move to surviving to thriving. And it's really fabulous. So please go to ruthsplaceaz.org and get the information you need, whether it's for yourself or for a friend, for someone else who has shared with you that they have experienced trauma, whatever it is, domestic abuse, rape, and everything in between. It's really important. And I think it's important for the Epstein survivors to know that we all understand their trauma and that we support them in moving on past the trauma, and applaud the courage, because this is not the ordinary group of abusers. These are men and Ghislaine Maxwell women, and there may have been other women, but that's the only name I personally know, powerful men that they are taking on. And I applaud them. So thank you to them. And thank you to you. Thank you to Civia. Thank you to NCJW AZ and NCJW nationally for taking on this project and, you know, building this very unique and welcoming place. I had the pleasure of being at the opening and seeing it. Actually, it was, I think, even before the opening, I saw it before furniture was in. And it's a very welcoming place that really everyone should know about and take advantage of. And thank you, Dr. Camilla Pekka, for being with us. And excellent. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Pekka, right? I got it right the second time.
Okay.
Sorry. Bad at that. But I really do appreciate the work you've done and how much you've contributed to the healing of so many. And there are some videos on the website that are very powerful. One of them I watched and immediately made a donation to Ruth's Place because it deserves our support. So thank you for all the work you've done. And good luck in moving many more people through this process.
Thank you. Thank you so much.